Chapter 2, The Journey and the Punishment at the Inn. The next morning, all the court was gathered in the great hall to see the prince off, and all of the court, including the grateful king and queen, stood with their eyes down, bowing from the waist as the prince came down the steps with the naked beauty walking behind him. He had commanded her to clasp her hands on the back of her neck, beneath her hair, and to walk just a little to his right so that he might see her in the corner of his eye. She obeyed, her bare feet making not the slightest sound on the worn stone steps as she followed him. "Dear prince," said the queen when he reached the great front door and saw that his soldier stood mounted on the drawbridge, "we are in your eternal debt, but she is our only daughter." The prince turned to look at her. She was yet beautiful, though more than twice beauty's age, and he wondered if she too had served his great-grandfather. "How can you question me?" the prince asked patiently. "I have restored your kingdom, and you know full well, if you remember anything of the ways of my land, that beauty will be much enhanced by her service there." Then the telltale blush came to the queen as it had to the king before, and she bowed her head in acceptance. "But surely you will allow beauty some clothing," she whispered, "at least until she reaches the border of your kingdom. All those towns between here and my kingdom have owed their allegiance to us for a century, and in each I will proclaim your restoration and new dominion. Can you ask for more than that? The spring is warm already. Beauty shall suffer no ill effects from serving me immediately." "Forgive us, your highness," the king hastened to say, "but is it the same in this age? Beauty's servitude will not be forever." "It is the same now as it always was. Beauty will be returned in time, and she shall be greatly enhanced in wisdom and beauty. Now tell her to obey as your parents commanded you to obey when you were sent to us." "The prince speaks the truth, Beauty," the king said in a low voice, still unwilling to look at his daughter. "Obey him, obey the queen, and though you find your servitude surprising and difficult, be confident you will return, as he says, greatly changed for the better." The prince smiled. The horses were restless on the drawbridge. The prince's charger, a black stallion, was particularly hard to restrain. So the prince, bidding them all farewell again, turned and picked up Beauty. He heaved her easily over his right shoulder, clasping her ankles to his waist, and heard her cry out softly as she fell over his back. He could see her long hair sweep the ground just before he mounted the stallion. All the soldiers fell into place behind him. He rode into the forest. The sun spilled down in glorious rays through the heavy green leaves, the sky now brilliant and blue overhead, only to vanish in a shifting green-tinted light as the prince rode on at the head of his soldiers, humming to himself and now and then singing. Beauty's lithe, warm body swayed slightly over his shoulder. He could feel her trembling, and he understood her agitation. Her naked buttocks were still red from the spanking he had given her, and he could well imagine the succulent vision she was to the men who rode after him. As he walked his horse through a dense glade where the fallen leaves were thick and red and brown beneath him, the prince tied the rein on his saddle, and with his left hand felt the soft, hairy little pelt between Beauty's legs, and leaned his face against her warm hip, kissing it gently. After a while, he pulled her down into his lap, turning her as before so she rested against his left arm, and he kissed her red face and brushed the long golden strands of her hair away from it, and then he suckled her breasts almost idly as though taking little drinks from them. "Put your head on my shoulder," he said, and she inclined to him obediently at once. But when he went to sling her over his shoulder again, she gave a little desperate whimper. He did not allow this to stop him, and having her firmly in place, her ankles clasped to his hip, he scolded her lovingly, and gave her several hard spanks with his left hand until he heard her crying. "You must never protest," he repeated, "not with sound, not with gesture. Only your tears may show your prince what you feel, and never think that he does not wish to know. Now, respectfully, answer me." "Yes, my prince," Beauty whimpered softly, and he thrilled at the sound of it. When they came to the small town in the middle of the forest, there was great excitement, as everyone had already heard of the enchantment being broken. And as the prince rode into the crooked little street with its half-high timbered houses blocking out the sky, people ran to their narrow windows and doorways. They crowded into the cobblestone alleyways. Behind him, the prince could hear his men in hushed voices telling the townspeople who he was, that it was their lord who had broken the enchantment. The girl he carried with him was the Sleeping Beauty. Beauty was sobbing softly, her body struggling with each sob, but the prince held her firmly. Finally, with a great crowd following him, he arrived at the inn, and his horse, with loud clops, entered the courtyard. His page quickly helped him down. "We'll stop only for food and drink," said the prince. "We can go miles before sundown." He stood Beauty on her feet and watched with admiration as her hair fell down around her, and he turned her around twice, pleased to see she kept her hands clasped behind her neck and her eyes down as he looked at her. He kissed her devotedly. "Do you see how they all look at you?" he said. "Do you feel how they admire your beauty? They are adoring you," he said. And opening her lips again, he sucked another kiss out of her, his hand squeezing her sore buttocks. It seemed her lips clung to his as if she were afraid to let him go, and then he kissed her eyelids. "Now everyone is going to want to have a look at Beauty," the prince said to the captain of his guard. "Bind her hands over her head by a rope from the sign over the inn gate, and let the people have their fill of her. But no one is to touch her. They can look all they like, but you stand guard and see that no one touches her. I'll have your food sent out to you." "Yes, my lord," said the captain of the guard. But as the prince gently gave Beauty over to him, she leaned forward, her lips out to the prince, and he received her kiss gratefully. "You're very sweet, my darling," he said. "Now be modest and very, very good. I should be disappointed if all this adulation has made my beauty vain." He kissed her again and let the captain have her. Then, going inside and ordering his meat and ale, the prince watched through the diamond-paned windows. The captain of the guard did not dare touch her, except to put the rope about her wrists. He led her by this to the open gate of the courtyard, and, throwing the rope up over the iron rod that held the sign of the inn, quickly secured her hands above her head so that she was almost on tiptoe. Then he motioned for the people to move back, and he stood against the wall with his arms folded as they pressed to look at her. There were buxom women in stained aprons, coarse men in breeches and heavy leather shoes, the young, well-to-do men of the town in their velvet cloaks with their hands on their hips, as they eyed Beauty from a distance, unwilling to elbow through a crowd, and several young women in elaborate white headdresses, freshly done up, who had come out lifting their hems fastidiously as they looked at her. At first, everyone was whispering, but now people began to speak more freely. Beauty had turned her face into her arm and let her hair shield her face, but then a soldier came out from the prince and said, "His Majesty said to turn her and lift her chin so that they might have a better look." An approving murmur went up from the crowd. "Very, very lovely," said one of the young men. "And this is what so many died for," said an old cobbler. The captain of the guard lifted Beauty's chin and, holding the rope above her, said gently, "You must turn around, princess." "Oh, please, captain," she whispered. "Don't make a sound, princess, I beg you. Our Lord is very strict, and it's his wish that everyone admire you." Beauty, her cheeks flaming, obeyed, turning so the crowd could see her reddened buttocks, and then again to show her breasts and her sex as the captain kept his finger under her chin lightly. It seemed she breathed deeply, as though trying to remain very calm. The young men were calling her beautiful, saying her breasts were magnificent. "Oh, but such buttocks," whispered an old woman nearby. "You can see that she's been spanked. I doubt the poor princess did anything much to deserve it." "Not much," said a young man near her, "except have the most beautiful and perfectly shaped buttocks imaginable." Beauty was trembling. Finally, the prince himself came out, ready to leave, and seeing the crowd as attentive as before, he took himself the rope down and, holding it like a short leash above Beauty's head, turned her. He seemed amused by the crowd's grateful nods and thanks and bows to him, and very gracious in his generosity. "Lift your chin, Beauty. I shouldn't have to lift it," he reproved her with a little deliberate frown of disappointment. Beauty obeyed, her face so red that her eyebrows and eyelashes gleamed in the sun, and the prince kissed her. "Come here, old man," the prince said to the old cobbler. "Have you ever seen such loveliness?" "No, your majesty," said the old man. His sleeves were rolled to the elbows, and his legs were slightly bowed. His hair was gray, but his green eyes gleamed with a special, almost wistful pleasure. "She is truly a magnificent princess, your majesty, worth all the deaths of those who tried to claim her." "Yes, I suppose so, and worth all the bravery of the prince who did claim her," smiled the prince. Everyone laughed politely, but they couldn't conceal their awe of him. They were staring at his armor, his sword, and above all his young face and dark black hair that fell to his shoulders. The prince drew the cobbler closer. "Here," he said, "I give you permission, if you like, just to feel her treasures." The old man smiled at the prince gratefully and almost innocently. He reached out and, hesitating a moment, felt Beauty's breasts. Beauty shivered and tried, obviously, to repress a little cry. The old man then touched her sex. Then the prince drew up her leash so she was standing on tiptoe. Her body stiffened and seemed to grow more tense at the same time, more lovely. Breasts and buttocks high, calf muscles lifted, chin and throat a perfect line down to her swaying bosom. "That's all. You must all go now," said the prince. Obediently, they backed away, but they continued to watch as the prince mounted his horse and, instructing Beauty to clasp her hands behind her neck, ordered her to walk before him. Beauty led the way out of the inn yard, the prince walking his horse behind her. The people made way for her. They couldn't take their eyes off her lovely, vulnerable body, and they squeezed against the narrow walls of the town to follow the spectacle to the edge of the forest. When they had left the town behind, the prince told Beauty to come to him. He gathered her up and seated her before him again, and kissed her again, and scolded her. "You fought that so hard," he crooned. "Why were you so proud? Did you think yourself too good to be shown to the people?" "I'm sorry, my prince," she whispered. "Don't you see, if you think only of pleasing me and pleasing those to whom I show you, it will be simple." He kissed her ear, holding her tight to his chest. "You should have been proud of your breasts and your shapely hips. You should have asked yourself, am I pleasing my prince? Do the people find me pleasing?" "Yes, my prince," Beauty said meekly. "You are mine, Beauty," the prince said a little more sternly. "And there is no command that you must shrink from obeying ever. If I tell you to please the lowliest vassal in the land, you will strain to obey me perfectly. He is your lord then, because I have said so. All those to whom I offer you are your lords." "Yes, my prince," she said, but she was in great distress. He stroked her breasts, pinching them firmly now and then, and kissed her until he could feel her body struggling against him, feel her nipples growing hard. It seemed she wanted to speak. "What is it, beauty?" "Pleasing you, my prince. Pleasing you," she whispered, as though her thoughts had spread into delirium. "Yes, pleasing me. That is your life now. How many of those in the world know such clarity, such simplicity? You please me, and I shall always tell you exactly how." "Yes, my prince," she sighed, but she was crying again. "I will treasure you all the more for it. The girl I found in the castle room was nothing to me, such as you are now, my devoted princess." But the prince was not entirely satisfied with the way in which he was instructing Beauty. He told her when they reached another town at nightfall, he was going to strip a little more dignity away from her to make it easier. And while the townspeople pressed their faces to the leaded glass windows of the inn, the prince had Beauty wait on his table. On her hands and knees, she hurried across the rough boards of the inn floor to fetch his plate from the kitchen. And though she was allowed to walk back with it, she was again on all fours to fetch his flagon. The soldiers devoured their supper, throwing silent glances at her by the light of the fire. She wiped the table for the prince, and when a morsel of food spilled from his plate to the floor, he commanded her to eat it. With tears spilling from her eyes, Beauty obeyed, and then he gathered her, still on her knees, into his arms and rewarded her with dozens of wet, loving kisses. Obediently, she put her arms around his neck. But this little morsel spilling had given him an idea. He ordered her to quickly fetch a plate from the kitchen again, and then told her to lay it on the floor at his feet. He put food for her there from his plate, and told her to lift her heavy hair behind her shoulders and eat it only with her mouth. "You are my kitten," he laughed gaily, "and I would forbid you all those tears if they weren't so beautiful. Do you want to please me?" "Yes, my prince," she said. With his foot, he pushed her plate several paces away and told her to turn her buttocks to him as she continued her meal. He admired it, realizing the red marks from her spanking were almost gone. With the toe of his leather boot, he nudged at the silken hair he could see between her legs, felt the moist, plump lips beneath the hair, and sighed, thinking her so very beautiful. When she had finished her meal, with her lips, she pushed the plate back to his chair, as he ordered her to do, and then he wiped her lips himself and fed her some wine from his cup. He watched her long, beautiful throat as she swallowed and kissed her eyelids. "Now listen to me. I want you to learn from this," he said. "Everyone here can see you, all your charms. You are aware of it, but I want you to be very aware of it. Behind you, the townspeople at the windows are admiring you as they did when I brought you through the town. This should make you proud of yourself. Not vain, but proud. Proud that you have pleased me and caught their admiration." "Yes, my prince," she said when he paused. "Now think. You are very naked and very helpless, and you are mine completely." "Yes, my prince," she cried softly. "That is your life now, and you are to think of nothing else and regret nothing. I want that dignity peeled away from you as if it were so many skins of the onion. I don't mean that you should ever be graceless. I mean that you should surrender to me. Yes, my prince, she said. The prince looked up at the innkeeper, who stood at the kitchen door with his wife and daughter. They came to attention at once, but the prince looked only at the daughter. She was a young woman, very pretty in her own way, but nothing compared to beauty. She had black hair and round cheeks and a small waist, and dressed like many peasant women did, in a low-cut ruffled shirt waist and a short broad skirt that revealed smart little ankles. She had an innocent face and was watching Beauty in wonder, her big brown eyes moving anxiously to the prince and then shyly back to Beauty, who knelt at the prince's feet in the firelight. Now, as I told you, the prince said softly to Beauty, all here admire you, and they enjoy you. The sight of you, your plump little rear, your lovely legs, those breasts which I cannot stop myself from kissing. But there is no one here, not the lowliest, who is not better than you, my princess, if I command you to serve him. Beauty was frightened. She nodded quickly as she answered, yes, my prince. And then very impulsively, she bent and kissed the prince's boot, but then appeared terrified. No, that is very good, my darling. The prince, stroking her neck, reassured her. That is very good. If I allow you one gesture to speak your heart unbidden, that is it. You may always show me respect of your own accord in that manner. And again, Beauty pressed her lips to the letter, but was trembling. These townspeople hunger for you, hunger for more of your loveliness, the prince continued. And I think they deserve a little taste of it that will delight them. Beauty kissed the prince's boot again and let her lips rest there. Oh, don't think I should really let them have their fill of your charms. Oh, no, said the prince thoughtfully. But I should use this opportunity both to reward their devoted attention and teach you that punishment will come whenever I desire to give it. You need not be disobedient to merit it. I will punish when it pleases me. Sometimes that will be the only reason for it. Beauty couldn't keep herself from whimpering. The prince smiled and beckoned to the innkeeper's daughter. But she was so frightened of him, she didn't come forward until her father pushed her. My dear, said the prince gently, in the kitchen, have you a flat wooden instrument for shoveling hot pans into the oven? There was a faint movement throughout the room as the soldiers glanced at one another. People outside pressing closer to the windows. The young girl nodded and quickly returned with a wooden paddle, very flat and smooth from years of use, with a good handle. Excellent, said the prince. But Beauty was crying helplessly. The prince quickly ordered the innkeeper's daughter to seat herself on the edge of the high hearth, which was the height of a chair, and told Beauty on her hands and knees to go to her. My dear, he said to the innkeeper's daughter, these good people deserve a little spectacle. Their life is hard and barren. My men deserve it as well, and my princess can well use the chastisement. Beauty knelt crying before the girl, who, seeing what she was used to, was fascinated. Up over her lap, Beauty, said the prince. Hands behind your neck, and lift your lovely hair out of the way, at once, he said, almost sharply. Pricked by his voice, Beauty almost scurried to obey, and all those around her saw her tear-stained face. Keep your chin up like that, yes. Lovely. Now, my dear, said the prince, looking at the girl who held Beauty over her lap and the wooden paddle in the other hand. I want to see if you can wield that as hard as a man might wield it. Do you think you can do that? He could not stop from smiling at the girl's desire to delight and to please. She nodded, murmuring a respectful reply, and when he gave her the command, brought the paddle down hard on Beauty's naked buttocks. Beauty couldn't keep still. She struggled to keep quiet, but she couldn't keep still, and finally even the whimpers and moans escaped her. The tavern girl spanked her harder and harder, and the prince enjoyed this, savoring it far more than the spanking he had given Beauty himself. It was partially because he could see it much better, see Beauty's breasts heaving, tears spilling down her face, her little buttocks straining as if, without moving, Beauty might somehow escape or deflect the girl's hard blows. Finally, when her buttocks were very red but not welted, he told the girl to stop. He could see his soldiers enthralled, and all the townspeople as well, and then he snapped his fingers and told Beauty to come to him. "Now, eat your suppers, all of you. Talk amongst yourselves. Do as you like," he said quickly. For a moment, no one obeyed him. Then the soldiers turned to one another, and those outside, seeing that Beauty was retired down to kneeling, her hair veiling her face, her raw, stinging buttocks pressed to her ankles, murmured and talked at the windows. The prince gave Beauty another drink of wine. He was not sure he was entirely satisfied with her. He was thinking of many things. He called the innkeeper's daughter to him and told her she had been very good, gave her a gold coin, and took the paddle from her. Finally, it was time to go up, and driving Beauty before him, he gave her a few gentle but brisk spanks to hurry her up the stairs to the bedchamber